You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, all you dog-loving peeps out there. It's me, Tom Davis, America's canine educator, and welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. Just wanted to say thank you guys so much for the support. I love you guys so much for everything that you do for me. We have been ranked like top 10 podcasts in the pet and in the pet industry in the United States for like 6 months now, or we were. I don't know if we still are, but anyway, we were ranked for a while. So anyway, you guys are rocking. You guys are killing it. Thank you so much for consuming the content. Today we have an episode that goes into a lot of different things. We're talking about a fearful dog, but we also go into some of the different types of scenarios and different types of terminology and methods about working with fearful dogs, and of course talking about the solutions and the things that we've done and some things that could work. So it's a dog training involved thing. It talks a lot about what to do with working with a fearful dog, the tools to use, why to use these tools, why to not use some of these tools. So it really is an in-depth conversation I have with one of my online clients. I really enjoyed it. So we're going to jump right into that. But before I do, I just wanted to say thank you guys again. If you guys haven't yet, you guys can support the podcast by just simply leaving a review on your podcast platform. It would mean the world to me. I do this for free, so it would be awesome if you guys could just pop down there and tell me what you think about the podcast. It would mean a lot to me. So let's get in the podcast.
Hello.
Hello, this is Tom.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Awesome. Go for it.
Go for it.
What are we dealing with here?
Awesome. Well, so I basically reached out. I've actually recently came across your YouTube videos, which have been really helpful. Which is why I, you know, reached out to you guys. But I have a 3-year-old lab border collie mix, I think. She's a rescue. And I got her when she was about 6 months old. And, you know, I think the biggest issue is fear aggression. And I've worked with a trainer before, and we've kind of worked on some training with a prong collar. But she still, I haven't been able to get it like fully sort of managed. Like, it's definitely manageable now, but especially in the past few months, it's gotten a little worse, where she just seems a little bit more aggressive towards people and dogs. And it's getting to the point where, like, I can't really even go visit family that have other dogs. Well, I can, but it's just a very stressful situation. So that's kind of the thing. And yeah. And so she's a rescue. I don't know much about, you know, what her environment beforehand, but I think that she was very like isolated, and then all of a sudden in a kind of a city environment. So that's always been an issue. So she's very aware of like everything that's going on, and like scared of kind of everything. So yeah.
Yeah. So she's fearful of she's fearful of like dogs and people, or just everything, or
yeah. I mean, once she is like desensitized to you or that dog, like she's fine. It's like the initial sort of meeting, which is to say, you know, there are certain dogs like she just doesn't like ever, but she has like a few dog friends that she's fine with, but mm-hmm. that's kind of it. And then, yeah, like on walks, even if there's like, you know, especially men, especially kids, scooters, strollers, kind of everything. She just wants to get away from them. And so what I've been doing, which is probably been making it worse, is I just kind of cross the street or try to get away from it. 'Cause another thing that has happened twice is, you know, she'll get into a situation where I'm trying to just get us past this one thing, but she doesn't want to do it. So she'll actually, you know, yank the collar, and she's gotten out twice, which has been, you know, really scary. So, sure. Also just want to avoid that too.
So she's fearful of literally everything when you're out on a walk until she's used to it or desensitized to it. Now, when she slipped out of the collar, was that that was a prong collar or?
So that was a prong collar. We use a star mark. I think okay. that was my fault, obviously, because I think I got a size maybe too big, and then it just wasn't on. It might have just been too big, and she's just very like, wiggly.
Yeah.
The other time that it happened, so that was one time. The other time it happened, it was a harness collar. It was a harness. Okay. So Yeah.
No, that makes sense. Okay. So your ultimate goal is to get her more confident, obviously, with new things, new people, in certain situations. She's 6 months old. How long have you had her?
Oh, so sorry. I got her when she was 6 months. She's 3 years.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That was my bad. I just wrote, yeah. I like write notes down super fast. So I'm like writing.
No,
you're 6 good. Months old, blah, 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 you know? Okay, so three months.
Yeah.
You've had her for 6 months since she was 6 months old, but she's 3 years old about now. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like 2.5 years.
Okay, so now I talk about this often too. Is like there's certain types of dogs, just like with people, that are like just not comfortable with certain things. So trying to take a circle and put it in a triangle hole type thing is like you get somebody that's just terrified of public speaking, and then they get to mm-hmm. a point where they finally do it. They're still not going to love it. They're still not going to, you know, and you can, you know, put that template into literally anything, but you get the idea.
Right.
So that's the first thing I like to say is like we have to be realistic with our expectations of what she can do. What is her name?
Emma.
So we have to be realistic with the expectations of what Emma can do. And we have to be fair to ourselves too, because I think people give themselves like unrealistic expectations as well, which is, you know, not ideal. So moving forward, I think that what you should be really practicing and focusing on is how to, I don't want to say manage because that's not the right word, but how to start to really get her a little bit more comfortable with these environmental changes and the environmental sequences that are happening around her. I would mm-hmm. say, just to give you an example, we can realistically get her more comfortable with children being around or a guy or a man being around, but there's certain limitations to what that individual can do with her and towards her.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, hey, it's realistic and fair to say you can't freak out when a child is around, but I think it's fair to say it's appropriate for you to maybe freak out if a child came running up to you screaming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what type of training have you done so far? I know you said you worked with the trainer and you've used a prong collar and a harness and all these different things, which doesn't matter as much to me right now. I just want to know, what are some exercises you found that has worked so far in Emma's training?
So I think the best thing that we've been working on is, I got a trainer like kind of right at the beginning because like she literally just wouldn't walk for me at mm-hmm. all. So I needed to, you know, figure that out. So I worked with a trainer and we did, starting with sit stay, place. The thing that she mastered, I mean, she hasn't, like, I haven't been, you know, super, I could have been stricter probably. So she's really good when, like, we're together. So she'll sit for me, she'll stay, she'll do place, she'll go to place.
In public?
But when, in public, so if there are too many things going on, no, she's like freaking out.
Okay.
If we're like far enough away, she'll sit. Like for example, I just took her on a walk, right before this, and there was a little girl with a scooter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's normally, you know, a trigger. But I actually, you know, I just got her into a sit, and she didn't freak out, but they were across the street. So I think if they were closer, it would have been more of a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. And that sort of thing. So it's more like she's very obedient when she is, you know, not afraid, but if there right. are other things going on, she like can't really, concentrate on that.
No, that makes sense. So when you're out, and this is something that a lot of people have a problem with, specifically with like a fearful dog, is at home or maybe outside in your yard, the obedience is there. But when you get out, they shut down because they're just so fearful. And a lot of it is vulnerability too. The dog mm-hmm. just shuts down because they don't want to really focus on you because they're fearful of somebody coming up or whatever.
Right.
Is there any reason, I mean, was she abused, or is there any reason for her to necessarily be like this prior?
Not that I know of, and the rescue didn't really give me a lot of information. Like, I kind of, you know, I asked them, like, because we agreed, you know, I was going to get a puppy. I was actually supposed to get her earlier, like around four-ish months. But I just think something happened and I got her at 6 months, and they said she was, you know, a normal puppy. She was actually with, her siblings. So maybe once, you know, I got her and it was just us, maybe some of that confidence went away. I don't really know.
Right.
But she was definitely in Louisiana, and then she was transported up. I'm guessing, she was more in like a rural area where not a lot of yeah. contact. And then maybe like was handled by, you know, maybe men sure. who were at the shelter or something like that.
Sure.
So yeah. Okay. The trainer that I worked with beforehand said she doesn't think she was abused, but
okay.
you know, who really knows?
Yeah. Who really knows? All right. So yeah. Actions to move forward. I would say, and again, I don't know everything that you've done so far. So what I would start doing is she food motivated at all? Does she like, what is her motive? What does she like to work for?
Yeah, she's definitely food motivated. The thing is when she is overwhelmed, she won't eat food.
Right. And that's with most dogs, which is why like a lot of the behavioral work I deal with, you can't use food. You can't use motivation at all because they shut down every single time. So even if you bring the dog in for 6 months every day, they're like, nope, I'm uncomfortable. I can't do this. They're at that level. So you have to use alternate methods in order to like really break through. So here's what I would do is I would go out and really work on like a hybrid area. And a hybrid area for her would be a situation where it's definitely in her out of her comfort zone, but it's not extraordinarily out of her comfort zone where she's shutting down completely. So getting mm-hmm. that area where she's a little bit, I call it a hybrid, I just made it up, but like a hybrid zone where she's decently okay.
Right.
And then working on maybe engagement. So working on like a focus command or working on something like that. Now, realistically, and that's my thing, right? I'm realistic. I'm mm-hmm. down to earth as can be. I'm not going to give you a bunch of unrealistic fairy dust stuff.
Right.
If you even work on a sit, a stay, or a focus with a dog that is really innately, instinctually vulnerable to a point where they feel like they're under attack, they're not going to do any of that anyway. They're going to be looking right. around at their shoulder all the time. You put them in a sit, they jump up and they turn around, they hear something.
Yeah.
You know, so I understand that moving forward in a more distracted environment, obedience may not play a role. But I mm-hmm. would hybridly or alternatively be working on some of that obedience with lots of positive reinforcement, lots of food. And when I say lots of food, for me, lots of food is like probably different from other trainers. But, you know, just focus on me. pay him a little bit, mm-hmm. focus on me, pay him a little bit, give him a break, put him in a sit, pay him, yay. Lots of verbal praise too. You know, good sit, Emma. Good job, Emma. Like all that stuff. Now that's what I would start off with. And I'm sure you've already kind of crossed those boundaries. And then what I would also do is get, start off with maybe a slip. If you, it sounds like you don't have the right prong collar, right now, but start off with maybe a slip and then start going into those environments where you feel like she's going to start being insecure, maybe shut down. Because sometimes when you get an animal that is like completely shut down, sometimes it goes one way or the other. Sometimes if you stop and put them in that environment, they do good or bad. Sometimes they freak out even more where they're like, we got to go. They get into fight or flight, mm-hmm. flighty. Mm-hmm. And then other times they do good where they're looking around and they're looking side to side and they're like, hey, this isn't so bad. And then that gives you an opportunity to like, good job, Emma. And they're like, what did I do? You know, and it makes it. And then there's always a flip side to everything. And then also sometimes talking to the dog distracts them from getting better because they're finally in their own head going, oh, this isn't so bad. This is getting good. I'm okay. And then you say, Emma, and she goes, wait, what? And then all of a sudden she like kind of throws herself off, kind of like running on a treadmill where you're paying attention to what you're doing. And then you look off to the other direction and then you almost fall because you're not paying attention and it throws you off completely. So so that's what I want you to do is investigate what works and what doesn't and don't be binary about anything because that's what my methodology is like when you're working with animals, you have to be as versatile as humanly possible to switch gears, switch equipment, switch up your tone, switch up everything. And really double down on what works and be like, yes, this is good. Capture. and so just flip the coin all the time and really alternate through those cycles of what's working and what's not and investigate. It may take a couple days or a couple weeks or a couple hours or whatever to really figure out what's working. But I would highly suggest to just switch out your stuff. So the other thing is just moving straight through those environments. So going to an area where it's a little busier and so say there's people on the left and the right and they're eating and they're talking and they're conversing and whatever. You want to keep her and just move straight through those situations. Shoulders straight, not looking at her, just grab and go. Just literally go. I say that a lot. Grab and go is just something that's like a phrase I say because that's what I want my clients to do when I'm working with them. They just freaking go right through. Just literally just hit it head on, you know? So that may give you an opportunity because, again, like sometimes because your goal, again, realistically is what I would say your goal is to be able to take her out without her having huge meltdowns and without her physically shutting down to a point where she won't move. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're ever going to get to a point where she's like, this is great. You know, I think that realistically, if you can just move past certain situations without her shutting down physically and hopefully mentally, that would be wonderful. Right?
So quick question about that. So say I were to take her to a hybrid, because, you know, to be honest, I think I've just avoided it because like we go hiking a lot. We go, you know, to more, you know, less populated parks.
Where do you live?
But I live in DC.
Okay.
So, and the area I live is kind of quieter than, you know, if you're familiar with like, you know, more of the downtown area.
Yeah.
So
I did some work in Alexandria last year, the year before. Cool. So I'm kind of familiar with that area.
Yeah. And there's actually a lot of options for like trails and stuff, which is great. Which I would do either way. Right. But, so the thing is, so we live next to this park. It's called Lincoln Park, and I've actually tried to take her there, kind of doing what you were saying, but we can't even get like, once we get there's like a block, and there you cross the street, and then there's the park. Mm-hmm. So we can't even really get to the intersection before she starts like trying to get out of the collar or like backing up or anything like that. So what do you suggest that situation happens?
So that's something that you have to, like, for me, okay? So I did this session It's one of my favorite sessions I've done in a long time, but it's with a very insecure pit bull. And the dog shut down, hid under the chair, shaking, just would not. She's worked with a trainer for 5 other months or whatever it was, and just would not open up. And it was, so my point is, she was making the decision to say, I'd rather not. So for me as a trainer, I have to empathetically, structurally represent myself in a way of, okay, I get it. Like, you're nervous, you're scared. Just like a kid going to like kindergarten or, you know, anything that you're like, it's naturally like, okay, this is not, I'm not comfortable with this, but you have to do it. You have to do it.
Right.
No matter what, you know? So, you know, for me, it's like, what have we actually tried to do, you know? And so in your case, you've tried a harness, flips out of that, right? You've tried a prong collar that maybe didn't fit properly. So that flipped out too, and it doesn't really work. And equipment is so valuable, and it doesn't matter what equipment it is, but if you use it right, it's like extraordinarily valuable.
Right.
So for me in that situation, I just got a 20-foot long line, and I was at the other. And so previously I would say, come on, tap, tap, tap with like a martingale or a slip collar, and the dog just choked. She'd rather choke herself out than come to me. And I was like, okay, I get this. You know, so then I just put the prong collar on the 2.25 small prong collar, fit it really nicely. It sat right above the dog's, you know, right behind the dog's ears, just fit really nicely. And I kid you not, it's all on film. It's beautiful. I just tapped it a couple times, and she just, ears down, came wiggling over to me, not happily, but like, okay, I'll come. And then she came, she sat in my lap. And I've done that before with another dog. It was a Yorkshire Terrier that was abused. They took all of her teeth out. They bred her. Same thing. She was just skidding away. And I had no leverage to. So again, here's my fork in the road. I get it. You're nervous. Yeah. But this is something that you really need to get over. And I don't want to force you. I don't want to make you. I don't want to muscle you to do anything that you don't want to do. However, how can I communicate with you, again, empathetically, humanely, responsibly, but sternly, to say, trust me, just try this, where the dog's not choking themselves out or causing long-term severe problems to them physically or even mentally. So that prong collar coming up fit properly, coming up and just saying, hey, twice. And she fought it a little bit. And she just moved forward. Right. She just went boom, 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 boom. And that, and I've seen that over and over and over and over again. So my point is, reflecting back to you and Emma, is when you get into a situation where she shuts down physically, she's mentally making a decision to say, nope, not doing it. Can't do it. Won't do it. Don't want to do it. This is scary. And you as a leader have to be like, I get it. I understand. Right? And I've had dogs pee in themselves, poop on themselves, like get to a point where they're physically thinking that they're going to die. And I have to be like, man, this is tough. I hate to see dogs like that. I hate to see any animal like that, to feel like me just saying, hey, let's just walk this way. Not because of me. They don't know me. It's just because they don't trust random people. And I get it. But I have to break down that barrier as a, I don't, it's not, that's not training at all. Training is like conditioning to me, like obedience training. This is relationship, life changing behavioral work, right? I have to break down that barrier to say, just trust me, just try. And you're never going to be able to do that having a conversation like we are right now with English, right? You have to speak a different language to the dog in order to really push them out of that boundary and push them out of that nest to say, just freaking go, right? Just go.
Yeah.
You get a harness, they slip out of it. You get a unfit prong collar, they slip out of it. You get a flat collar, they slip out of it. And even if you get a martingale collar that goes tight, they're going to choke themselves out. So what the fit prong collar allows you to do is just pressure up, release, pulsating like this back and forth. And you're not dragging. Because that doesn't do. Even if you drag the dog, you might as well put rollerblades on them. They're not making the mental decision to actually commit to you. So you're not not modifying that behavior at all. Right. So what you want to do is you say, "Hey, let's go, pop." with a long line, mm-hmm. maybe pop. And I can't tell you how many times that's worked for me. And I say this to the dog owners, and I'll say it to you. I go, here's what's going to happen. We're going to put this prong collar on Emma. She's going to fight me like she has been. Cause I don't always go to a prong collar, cause a lot of dogs don't need pressure. They don't need any, they just need a little of encouragement. So I try the slip, choke. No, you have to drag. Nope. Don't want to do that. That's silly. Same thing with the harness, mm-hmm. same thing with the flat, same thing with food. They're too stressed. Not going to work. Okay.
Right.
What do we freaking do? What do we do here? Okay. Well, let's spend 6 months. Nope. We don't have 6 months, you know, and it's because they're refusing to go, and they're making that it's a mental decision for them to say, no, not going to do it. So you have to make it okay for them to go. And so having that conversation with the prong collar allows them to open up and sustainably be able to say, okay, fine. And then I go, okay, we're gonna put a long line on. Because if you put a short line on, 4 foot, 6 foot, etc., mm-hmm. you're having that tug of war. Come on, let's go. And you're going back and forth, and they're like, no, and they're pulling, and they're, so I go away. I go 20 feet away, 15 foot away. Just a couple of taps, and then they finally go boom, 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 boom. And especially with you, because she's going to want to get to you. So now you do two things. You have the mm-hmm. support of the prong collar to help you give the dog the right push in the direction to say, let's go, without choking them. So it's a safer collar. And then you're away from the dog. So say there's a bunny in between, or a bench that has people in between. She mm-hmm. stops on one end, and you just walk away. And she puts on the brakes. You say, okay, I'm going this way. And you tug, and she might spin her head and flail. And then all of a sudden, because of the prong has such precision and such pressure where it needs to go distributing-wise, it's such a valuable, efficient, effective tool to say, let's go. It doesn't hurt them. It doesn't even mm-hmm. correct them. It's just coming up, and it's pulsating back and forth, like giving you the pressure, like, let's go. And you're 20 feet away. So then all of a sudden, they scram to you. And they get to you, and you say, Emma, good job, yay. You know, and she's kind of, she walked on water type thing. And finally, mm-hmm. and then you do it again. You go back the other way. And she goes, no, I can't. And I crap you not, every single time I do that back and forth like that, the dog just, so mentally, they walk past that bench or that person or that thing or that bike or whatever. And they slowly but surely get over it. And I've done it over and mm-hmm. over again. So that's what I would suggest for you. And that's like the sequence that I make. And then eventually they just walk, and then they feel. So say, mm-hmm. say, so, th- so they, so say you walk into another situation where she shuts down again, and mm-hmm. she feels that pressure, and she goes, oh, nope. And she jumps right towards you. I've done it. And I've done it on film so many times, and I have documented footage of that happening. So how can a prong collar, or something that historically people would consider an aversive tool, build confidence in a dog that's not confident, is by effectively being able to communicate with them in a way that they need to be communicated to. Because so many times we get on our hands and knees and we say, it's okay, Emma, let's go. And we give them food and chicken and steak and whatever we want to throw at them, their favorite is. And they're like, I don't care about that. So mm-hmm. you either beat around the bush and you avoid the situation for the rest of her life and your life, or you mm-hmm. you have the conversation that you need to have with her to get her over that hump. And she goes, oh, I'm not dead. It's not so bad. And I've done it over and over and over again. So it's completely blowing this, the air quote, scientifically proven aversives never work with confident or insecure dogs, building confidence. Mm-hmm. It 100% does, and it has over and over and over again for me and all my clients that I help with these situations. And so when we talk about modification versus suppression, which means mm-hmm. like if a dog, it like, so again, like I'm devil's advocate as AF as possible. Like I understand that there's certain limitations for certain things. I'm not like, I really want people to understand, especially you, that, you know, using this tool can help you and your dog progress significantly. That's why we're having this conversation. It's not, you're not, you know, we're not just like, hey, let's just talk about this for a little bit. This is something that people struggle with on the daily. And so my point is suppression would be the dog forced to do something or sustainably not successful, which means the next time you try to do this, it's not going to happen because you've basically just suppressed it. So you haven't fixed the behavior or modified the behavior. You've basically just suppressed it because they want to escape the aversive, right? So like in an equation with a dog that I did this, I did this recently too with a reactive German Shepherd. Mm. So again, a dog is reactive and a dog is completely losing their mind with is reactivity, which therefore maybe look like aggression to everyday people. Mm-hmm. And hell, maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, that's not the point. The point is the dog is reacting in a way because they're allowed to, much like human behavior, where if you're allowed to do this over and over and over and over again, drawing on the wall with Sharpies, kicking principals, spitting on people, whatever, without any repercussion or without any consequences for those actions, the only reason why that's going to go away is if they just decide, I don't want to do that anymore, right? You can't counter them with like, hey, have a cheeseburger instead. Well, then they eat the cheeseburger and then they go back to kick. It doesn't teach them anything.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The real thing is it's purely no punishment. So no punishment whatsoever. And so actually in the human society, imagine if we had no consequences, no punishment, it would be complete chaos and anarchy. Even more than it already is.
Yeah.
And in the animal kingdom, it's so derivated off of punishment and teeth and fury and get the heck out of here. It's so natural for dogs to understand consequences and corrections and things of that sort. I've studied it. I've watched it. It's real. It's 100% real. Even as little tiny puppies, it's real.
Mm.
So my point is the suppression would be correcting the dog and then them being afraid of the correction but still being pissed off at the other dog that they're reacting to.
Right.
So they're like, okay, I still hate that dog, but I'm not going to react because I'm afraid of the correction. I have over 100 videos of me actually correcting a dog and modifying a dog's behavior because the reaction that they were distributing or doing was actually fear-based. And when I say fear-based, it was mostly, I don't know what the hell to do. Once you correct the dog and say, leave it, and they go, oh, that's what you want me to do. That's way easier. I don't want to bark anyway. And then the dog goes up and sniffs the dog's butt, or the dog walks past the dog with their tail wagging 100 times, and we've studied and studied and studied this, then the suppression is non-existent because that's what... The other side to what we're talking about when we're dealing with Emma and we're dealing with a dog that's insecure and is fearful, never, 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 never use punishment. And in this case, the prong collar isn't going to be punishment. It's going to be a communication. It's going to be a way to add value to this mix. And that's what I think will really push you guys over the ledge to success.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Mentality and like in terms of like, you know, not being using a hybrid of things. And it has worked with Emma too, in the sense that, you know, the prong collar that I use now, it'll get us to a certain point. But I think that you're right that, you know, changing up the equipment could, you know, will definitely help.
Yeah.
'Cause I've been using the same one since, you know, obviously I got a better size, but the same kind, which is, it definitely looks different from the ones that I've seen you use. So it's probably, I don't know if it's like she's gotten so used to it now that it doesn't work as well or what, but yeah.
Well, yeah, all of that, but also too, like the long line plays a big role. Because again, it's not just it's all of it going into it. It's all of that. It's walking away 20 feet, 30 feet and saying, okay, I'm leaving. So again, let's paint a picture of walking on a sidewalk in a park and there's somebody on a bench or there's a kid on a bench or a guy on a bench or whatever she's afraid of. She puts on the brake. She goes, I can't. Right?
Right.
You drop that long, because you have the long line, you drop it, you have the prong collar, you keep walking. You get to the other side of the bench, you look at her and you say, Emma, come. Tap, tap, tap. And she's like, well, shoot, you're way over there. I got to get. And she just runs and sprints to you. And you're like, yay. And then she passes that gauntlet of terror. And she goes, oh, my God, do I have it? Okay, I'm alive. And you go, hey, good job. And then you just keep going. Like, it's no big deal. And she's like, whoa, this is living life a lot better than, you know, before. And we're walking and we're exercising and we're taking this environmental stuff in. And then you literally turn around and do the same thing again. And you hit it again. She puts on the, and I can almost guarantee you that the first time you have that communication with her via prong collar and she gets over it, the next time you go around, definitely the third time, but the next time you go around, she's going to be a little hesitant, but then she's just going to push right past it. She's going to go, okay, I'll go. I've seen, I can't express how many times that's worked for me.
And what if, cause you know, that's one reaction she'll have, but sometimes she'll act like lunge at people if they get too close or anything. So in that sense, what do you suggest with the long line, you know, if we're doing that and,
it's a great question. And I think, like, you know, what we're dealing with here is when we're dealing with something out of the ordinary, or we're dealing with something that needs a little bit more precision or a little bit more, this isn't like, okay, just drop it off, and like, this isn't just drop the oil chain off, it's this, it's that, it's this really specialty stuff, you have to switch up equipment and you have to switch up gears really quickly. So I think and again, like, I want to mention too that a lot of I just did a live on this on my YouTube channel, but the demographic of, like, what I work with is not a puppy that came in 6 months that's jumping, or a puppy that came in 6 months that's barking, or whatever. The dogs that I'm working with primarily are coming from all over with severe issues. They're on their last leg. They're going to be euthanized. They've bitten people. They've killed cats. They've killed dogs. They've so on. And not always, but the point is, you know, the amount of tools and the amount of things I use is because of the demographic that I work with. I'm not working, especially when I post videos, you guys aren't seeing me work with very basic stuff that PetSmart's doing, or that, you know, a 4-H kid can do with hot dogs in their pocket. That's why I get a lot of flack for tools, tools, tools. It's like, yeah, but I'm working with this caliber of dog 100 times.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I want to reflect on that for a second with what you're saying is like, switching up gears and being creative and being versatile is something that you're going to have to get used to doing because of Emma's, you know, it's not a problem child. It's something that you have to get creative with. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I switch, like, I'll show up to a training session with, like, two leashes, a long line, an e-collar, a prong collar, slip collar, martingale collar, treats, hot dogs, like air horns, like whatever. I mean, you have to get versatile. If you're not versatile, you're one dimensional.
Sure.
You know, why would you want to do that to yourself and to your clients? So you have to switch gears, and it's not hard. It just takes a little bit of practice. You have to be able to switch up gears pretty quickly, depending on the environment that you're surrounding. But I would say, realistically, once you get over that push of, like, getting through these certain, like, rabbit holes of no, I can't, to okay, I can. Again, realistically, is like, you know, the first conversation we had is, we're not looking for her to jump into random people's laps. We're just looking for her to just get a little bit better each time. And so, I think after you do that with the long line, you switch back over to your 6 foot, your 4 foot, you'll be fine. So now you're back to normal healing. And then if she lunges, leave it. But again, there's two, there's a flip to that. That coin is flipping like a Joker coin. you have to also realize that you're managing and advocating for her in public to make sure kids aren't running up, men aren't running up, anybody really for that matter, aren't also coming up to get into her face, to pet her, to touch her. You're stopping that before that happens, because no dog is going to be comfortable with that.
Right.
In my opinion, you know, they're never going to, you know, some dogs are like, yeah, I don't care, kill me, you know, but then there's other dogs that are like, who the hell are you? What are you doing in my face? And you have to advocate for her, because she's extra in that department. So I think my point is going back to the 20 foot versus the reactivity, is once you get over that hump, I'm telling you right now, once you get over that hump and you have that conversation with her with the right equipment and the right pieces of tools, you just switch over to your 4 to 6 foot leash. I'd recommend a 4 foot.
Okay.
And then you're off to the races, and then you're healing, and she's tight with you, and, you know, you're paying attention to her, and you're conscious of what what areas you're putting her into. You're not going to walk in between somebody right. that's standing. You go around or you go the other way, and you don't put her into those situations because it's not fair. So I would just say like management and really like moving in the right direction as well. Like as far as momentum goes, like you're walking into an environment where you're like, how many people are going to reach out and touch her as I walk through this tunnel of people? Mm. You know, okay, well, four, right. that's four too many. You walk away, you go the other way.
Yeah.
Or mm-hmm. you put a muzzle on her, or you just say, hey, I'm just going to bring my dog through, or whatever. I mean, whatever you have to do. I mean, life throws you such crazy stuff. I'm just there to help you, you know, guide through that situation. But you just do the best you can with what you have.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So you suggest a prong collar 2.25 with a long lead in a hybrid sort of thing, and then working our way, obviously, being versatile with like what we have.
And I want to explain too, because here's what happens a lot of times in dog owners get really, and that's what I think experience and professionalism and like expertise comes into play too, because some dog owners will see stuff in like a training session and the dog will flail and freak out. And like, I'm just like, yeah, this is normal. And they're like, oh my God, you know? And I'm like, it's okay. It's all good. Just, this is normal part of the process, y'all. Just, she's nervous. She's in. So at the end of the leash, if she starts freaking out, you just stay neutral, nice and calm.
Right.
Because she's like, I can't. So a dog's not going to sit there and go, Mom, I can't. I don't want to. I'm nervous. There's the guy and there's the people and there's the kids and there's the bike. She's gonna try to run away. Fight or flight. It's very instinctual animal behavior. Doesn't matter if you're a beetle, a gorilla, a giraffe, or a dog. It's, I got to get out of here. I'm not comfortable with this. I'm going to die. And so you intake that information. You just relax. You just stay neutral. She fights you. You just stay neutral. Don't elevate, stimulate. Don't put more pressure on you. Just stay neutral. Fight. Let her calm down. Just like with kids, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're on an airplane and you don't let them freaking, you know, pull the red door and they cry and you're like, okay, you just have, what are you going to do? I mean, it's just, okay, this is what we're doing. Relax. So same thing, like if she fights you a little bit, it's normal, it's okay. You're not tugging and yanking and pulling and correcting her, you just stay there. And then once she calms down, give her a little pressure. Your momentum now, turn your body sideways. So if she's to your left, you're going to turn your body sideways and you're going to kind of say, let's go. And you just kind of like move forward and you just use your momentum to really move her forward, because your body language plays a big role. You're 20 feet away from her and there's somebody scary in between you. And you say, hey, let's go this way. She's going to want to get to you. And if you start walking away, it's kind of like, I always see this all the time with parenting, you know, where people are like, hey, we're leaving the park or we're leaving the playground. They're like, no. And you're like, all right, I'm out. Peace. And the moms just starts walking away and they're like, ah, and they come running to you. So it's very similar, very similar stuff. Of course, you have to just be, you know, careful about what you're doing around the people. Like for me, I'm so agile with the leash. Like I can maneuver so well with it that like I know I need to hold a leash a certain way, so I'll levy the leash a certain way where I know that if that guy's to my left and she comes to me and she for whatever reason wants to go at him, I have enough leverage where I can pull the dog away the other way. So you just have to be careful and be mindful of all those things too.
Right okay Yeah, that all makes sense.
But let me, I want to go back to the leave it with the reaction on the leash.
Okay.
So like, we talked about avoidance and management with people, but also too, if there's just random reactivity, again, you have to, you know, we talked about the, you know, kicking the principal, permanent marker on the wall. What you have to be assertive and correct the dog at that time when it happens as well. So verbally marking to the dog, like when you say leave it, and then you enforce the leave it with a correction or punishment, then it's very simple. I mean, it's human psychology, right? You have somebody sitting there robbing a bank and you're collecting all this money and they're like, hell yeah, this is great. This is what I want to do. And you put that template to anything else, whatever a dog wants to do or whatever they feel comfortable with. And you're just like, no, please don't stop. And it doesn't mean anything. You have to assertively say, hey, what are you doing? And that assertiveness for dogs isn't usually having a conversation, because they're so far gone into, I got to go. You have to have a different conversation with them. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, you have to represent something in a way that says you can't do this, or hey, like, you know, stop this. So if your dog reacts, you say, leave it, enforce it with a correction. And the dog goes, hey, I don't like that. And you go, hey, I don't like you biting people because it's going to kill you. You're going to be euthanized. You're going to be sued.
Right.
Whatever. It's important for you. Like, that shit's not going to, that's not cool. Like, you, yeah. Like, that's why for me, I use such assertiveness and such tools in certain situations because I care so much about dogs that if they do something wrong, like recall, I use mm-hmm. an e-collar with a dog because I love them dearly and I never mm-hmm. want them to be under a car. And I know that right. that happens just because rainbows and butterflies and fairy dust of like, Fido, come. Don't you love me? And yeah. they're like, no, I'm on a rabbit. I'm on a deer. I'm on a raccoon. I'm killing a rat, you know, whatever. So for me, right. it's like, it's serious as a heart attack is correcting a dog for lunging at somebody is life threatening to them. And I need mm-hmm. to do my part because I care to correct them at all costs to make sure that they never want to do that again because it could kill them. So
yeah.
when they lunge, you can't just, oh, so sorry, my dog's reactive. It's like, no, correction, bam. Don't ever do that right. again. That's inappropriate. That's deadly for you.
Right.
So
right.
you just have to make sure you're assertive, you're fair. So then in the future, if you're doing it right, your correction is scalable to a point mm-hmm. where, and at that point, I don't care if it's suppression or not, because if they don't do it, but they want to, I'm still okay mm-hmm. with that. I don't care about right. the politics of like, are you fixing it or are you hiding it? I don't care at that point. If they're not doing it, they're not doing it because I don't want them to do it. I mean, ultimately, right. I'd like to modify it. But at that point, when you're just passing somebody randomly at Lowe's and they reach out for your dog and they're fearing the correction, but they still want to bite them, I'm okay with that. I could care less if they really want to, but they don't. It saves their life and it saves somebody getting bit.
Right. So quick question about that. So in that situation, when I correct her, if she lunges, do I give her the command and then correct her, or do it simultaneously? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Well, I think it just depends on how you're doing it, when you're doing it, how many times have you done it already? So for mm-hmm. me, let's walk through a situation where you're walking and your dog's on, you know, any type of correction tool. It doesn't matter if you're using it doesn't matter if you're using an air horn, if you're using a gentle leader, if you're using a prong collar, whatever. If your dog lunges, at the time that they're doing the action, you're going to correct that behavior with whatever correction you have,
yeah.
right? If you have the timing and the professionalism and the skill sets yeah. to mark it as they're doing it, which a lot of people do not, because you're just trying to get them away from somebody from biting them.
Right.
That correction ultimately, like, the dog is going to learn that that action means that they get, so like, put your hand on a hot stove and you get burned. Okay, that sucked. I don't want to do that again. Right. So the action
right.
is what they understood of like, me doing this gets me this. Proactively in the future, if you're walking and you see your dog start to build physically, right, they start building, mm-hmm. you can see it, and you say leave it, and then they lunge and you say leave it and you correct them, you're mm-hmm. going to be able to skillfully mark and cue that that hey, don't do this proactively in the future. So we want to teach them that leave it means, hey, disengage. But that's something that, and again, like, the reason why I'm hesitant to say leave is because you really want to teach leave it outside of that anyway. So if right. your dog is reactive and lunging, you want to teach them to leave it outside of, hey, let's just go work on leave it with people's hands. No, mm-hmm. you want to work on leave it with toys and prey poles and food and whatever, balls,
right.
toys, whatever it is, proactively. Mm-hmm. So they know yeah. when you're out, you can counter condition your dog's behavior of what they feel like they need to do for whatever reason mm-hmm. with proactive obedience and counter conditioning. So
right, right.
does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Totally.
So in the action, then, correct.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Okay. I just had one other question before we run out is that, you know, a sort of long-term goal that would be nice, but I want to know your opinion, is, you know, Emma's just such a, I would love to like see her, like if we were out into this like hiking area and like be off leash with an e-collar, you know, and working on recall, you know, if we got to that point. But I've been told that for maybe like two reasons to not use an e-collar with her is that she is reactive and fearful and that it wouldn't be good for her. And then also, you know, say, you know, again, if we would be in an environment where, you know, she saw a dog she didn't like and whatever. Basically, you know, if I thought we were to that training point, but then, you know, something happened, what do you think about that? I guess in terms of both it being harmful for her, but also.
And I think it's a great question. And the application of the tool is what makes or breaks that situation. I would agree that if you're a trainer, which they're out there that only uses the e-collar as an aversive only, right off the bat, bang, this sucks for you if you don't listen, then yeah, that would not be a good situation for her because she is a sensitive, insecure dog and you're going to start to create a lot of superstitious associations and it's going to be potentially riskful for your dog's mental state of mind. But the application that I use it in, it's nothing like that. Absolutely nothing like that. I've taught in many, like the application of the e-collar is as good as the person who's doing it. And the training of the e-collar is as good as the person applying it. So it's just like anything else. So I think that if you're using it in a way that like I use it as a low level stimulation and the dog can barely feel it and it's an association tool where they actually, like if I get my e-collars out right now, my dogs go nuts because they're so excited. So like that's what it means to me and all my clients, the way that I introduce it. So I don't think you just have to make sure. Of course, there's so many freaking, I mean, anybody in the world can be a dog trainer tomorrow. You tomorrow could be a dog trainer. Make your card, make your website, get a facility, bam.
Right.
Just scary. So it just depends on how you apply the situation and how you apply the tool. So if you're using it as just a recall stimulation backup plan and you're just leveling it in very featheredly, very lightly, very low and very fun for the dog where the dog is responsive for food, that's what I do. I do low-level stimulation. The dog responds and they get paid with food. So when they feel that stimulation, they zip to me as fast as they possibly can and they get paid for it. They love it. Mm-hmm. Love that stimulation. Love the e-collar. Positive-only trainers would, or non-corrective trainers would just cringe hearing that, but it's the truth. They love. And you watch, I've done it time and time and again, time and time and time again, living, breathing proof on video format of dogs just responding. So their tails are wagging, their ears are up, they're so happy, they're engaged, they love it. So if you do it that way, you're good. But if you use it as an aversive only, I could see where that's going to run into problems for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right.
And then in the future, you can use it as an aversive if you'd like. But I wouldn't start off with just like, hey, this collar is going to suck for you and it's going to be a correction. Because that's where dogs get very collar aware. And they're like, this thing sucks. But 99% of the time, it should be very layered in like a very positive way where they love it. That's what it is to me. Right. It's what it is to my clients and my dogs.
Yeah.
They hear like the plastic of the prong collar like move and they're like right there. They're like, hell yeah, let's do this.
That's awesome. I would definitely need to work a lot with it being a very positive thing for her. I think I would honestly, if I ever did that, would work with a trainer who used it in that way and you know, learn from them too, because I don't think I would trust myself.
It's pretty in depth. I always suggest people just hiring a trainer that can help you through the process for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I mean, I think that was kind of all of the things I wanted to address, at least now. But I think, you know, we'll start with using that prong collar and kind of working on those exercises. Because it's so funny, because like, I know when she, like, for example, she has like this dog friend and they're a couple and there's a, you know, obviously a man in the equation and she's totally fine with him. And like he pets her and whatever. And so I know she can be okay that, you know, we just need to work on getting there. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. You just have to start, you know, there and send me an email and update me and let me know what's going on with it.
For sure. I will. Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful day. It was nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Thank you so much and take care.
Lots of information going on here, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We're going to be hitting this back again next week, so make sure you turn on your notifications. Again, if you haven't yet, do me a favor, leave a review, rate this podcast. Let me know what you think about it. I appreciate you guys so much. You're the best. I will talk to you next week. Bye.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.